Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Blair Horner. Well, Blair Horner, you got to know about. He's a guy who, if they got to quote somebody on state government, it's almost always Blair Horner who ends up on the front page of the New York Times. He's the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG, an organization that he has really brought a long, long way. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you. So with surgical precision, let's talk about some of the things that are going on in state government. The year in review, for example. How much trouble is Andrew Cuomo in? I can't figure this out. On the one hand, I'm hearing people saying he should run for president. On the other hand, I'm hearing he's got all kinds of problems.
Well, you know, in the year in review part, it's been quite a year. Certainly the heads of the legislature, both houses, they're facing time in the pokey for next year. The governor's sort of closest advisor is in legal trouble. Another ally of the governor, who is a lobbyist, has pled guilty to corruption charges. The head of the state's Nano Center is in deep hot water with the U.S. Attorney's Office. So, you know, the governor's path to the White House, if it exists, evaporates quickly if any of these cases go to trial and the administration, even if they're not the subject of any inquiry, gets tarnished. I mean, you can look at Chris Christie's sort of path. And, you know, that evaporated even to a high-level position within the federal government under the Trump administration. He's nowhere. He's lost. And it's largely due to the investigations that looked at the so-called Bridgegate scandal in New Jersey. So if the governor, if this goes to trial with his top aide,
Joe Prococo,
and there are revelations that make the administration look bad, even if they're not anything regarding the criminality, it could be a real setback for whatever ambitions the governor may have.
Well, not to beat the dead horse, but we do know that Todd Howe, the lobbyist you're referring to, who used to be an intimate player in the Cuomo operation and who the Cuomo people are putting a lot of separation between, has pled guilty.
Yeah.
And he and Prococo, the governor's alleged third brother, who Mario loved more, were very close, and they were in correspondence, and we know what some of that correspondence said.
That's right, that's right. I mean, Todd Howe has, since he pled guilty, he's singing.
And, like a canary in a coal mine.
That's exactly. Well, hopefully not a canary in a coal mine.
No.
That'd be bad news for everybody.
Yeah.
But in terms of
particularly
Howe,
the canary.
And the coal mine. The Howe's, the fact that he's basically providing state's evidence against Prococo puts Prococo in precarious sort of situation. Again, we haven't heard his side of the story, and like in anything else, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. But it's certainly torpedoed the governor's sort of strategy for economic development in upstate. So, for example, recently a Nano Center deal that was supposed to be built in Utica, the company, the Austrian-based company, pulled out, citing some of the fact that the administration's been foot-dragging dealing with the company, and of course the scandals swirling around the state's economic development strategies. And so the governor is going to pay a political price for all of this. There's no doubt. The question whether or not it's small or big, I think, hinges on whether or not the Prococo cases go to trial or if Prococo is found guilty.
So we do know that Andrew Cuomo has a huge problem upstate. When a political unknown, Zephyr Teachout, ran against him in a Democratic primary for governor, he lost most of upstate.
Yeah, he lost most of upstate against the Republican challenger.
And then against the Republican. So no matter how much from the moment he's become governor, he's been protesting that he wants to do more for upstate. What's the problem?
You know, actually, it may be outside of his control. Recent census data came out talking about how there's been a loss in population in New York State, largely the result of loss in population in upstate. But when you look at the census data, it's the whole Northeast and Rust Belt region of the country that's losing population. It's not just upstate New York. And so there may be forces beyond the control of even a state government to sort of stem that. And it was really the Rust Belt unhappiness which fueled Trump's victory in some of them, particularly in Wisconsin and Michigan. So, you know, there's a legitimate issue there. It may be beyond the control of the governor. Every governor, every U.S. Senate candidate comes into office saying they're going to help deliver for upstate New York. It hasn't happened for the last 50 years. It's hard to believe anything magical is going to happen anytime soon.
Maybe they ought to secede in upstate New York and try it on their
own. Some people talk about that. I mean, the governor's strategy seems to be to infuse an enormous amount of state money into these high-tech centers that would follow I-90 from Albany to Buffalo. He has proposals in Rochester, Syracuse, Utica, Buffalo, and Albany. And there seems to be that there's like an industrial high-tech corridor that he's trying to build that theoretically would have these spillover benefits. But it's been an enormous amount of money. It certainly hasn't paid off as yet and has drawn the attention of the U.S. Attorney's Office, which I think makes the situation even more complicated.
So it's not a good situation for him. And yet, when you look around at both Republicans and Democrats who might want to take him on in a Democratic primary or in a general election, there ain't much, including the fact that his last guy out turns out to be a bit of an idiot. A rich idiot, but nevertheless has said some terrible things about the President of the United States and his wife, racist things, which have brought down total condemnation.
Yeah, Carl Palladino, now his best defense, as far as I can tell, is to say that he was just musing to his friend and he didn't know it was going to become public. The musings to your friend are just as offensive as they, if they become public.
And for those of us who have raised children, we know that defense doesn't work.
Or breathe. Or who breathe in a modern, you know, society filled with hopefully tolerant people. They're just really off the charts, so much so that even his family members have abandoned him on this.
Well, one of them is running his company, and he defended him and said that Junior did the right thing in calling him out on this racist stuff. Yeah. Hey, they don't want to lose their company.
Yeah, so I don't think Carl Palladino will be a problem for the governor. The interesting thing for the governor, I agree with your analysis. I mean, in many ways, he's been very effective. He has a tremendous war chest. He's a ferocious candidate and political figure. And so taking him on, you better be ready for a fight and you better have the resources to be able to do it. And there's not that many people certainly on the political horizon in New York that meet those standards.
Okay, I'm going to go fast with you. First of all,
I don't know if I can go fast back, Alan, but I'll do what I can.
He's very angry at the legislature, and the legislature's very angry with him. They wanted a pay raise. He wanted ethics reform. He was right on the ethics reform, I can tell you that much. And so now there's really strained relations between both houses of the legislature and this governor. And he says, nah, I'm going to get you. I'm not going to do a state of the state this year.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's be for the first time in, I don't know, almost 100 years, a governor won't be delivering a state of the state to the legislature. I mean, I assume he'll be sending them the Constitution. Constitutionally required written document.
Sure.
But the governor's plan is to do 6 regional state of the state addresses. We don't know where yet. We know the regions that they'll be in: Central New York, Western New York, Capital Region, not Albany, Hudson Valley, New York City, and Long Island. But we don't know necessarily where they'll be, what time, what days. He's talking about doing the week of January 9th. So this is a way, I mean, when the governor does his state of the state addresses in the past, he would unveil his state of the state address and then deploy his cabinet level staff and lieutenant governor to sort of do these regional things. And effectively what he's doing is doing it himself instead of sending his lieutenants. It's also a way to avoid the legislature. It's a well-trod path. When Governor Pataki's relationship with the legislature went south, which was around this time in his tenure as governor, he avoided Albany like the plague. It was almost like we had to put his picture on a milk carton to sort of identify, you know, where is the governor, right? And so I think that Governor Cuomo, you know, he knows that Albany is held in great disregard among the rank and file populace. He doesn't want maybe the names Cuomo and Albany to appear in the same sentence. So this is, in a sense, a smart strategy in that way, but will only make the toxic relationships that he's having with the legislature worse, because they will view it as effectively a political act of war on top of what he did with the pay raise.
Well, wait, let's talk about this pay raise business. Okay, so he said, I want something back. He may not have put it in those words, but what he wanted was ethics reform. He was totally justified in that, meaning a limit on outside income, among other things that legislators could get. Now, I keep getting mail from legislators and others who say, hey, come on, most of us don't have outside interests. And yet, Speaker Hastie, otherwise known in my vocabulary as Boss Hastie from the Bronx, and John J. Flanagan from the Senate, I always like to put the J in because it sort of makes it funnier, and John J. Flanagan of Long Island, they say nothing doing. Now, who are they shilling for? If most of them don't care and most of them don't get money on the outside, why in the world wouldn't they just vote for it?
Well, I mean, it's a very good question. The people who really have control over this are relatively around half of the Senate Republican majority. Those senators do have significant outside income. And Senate Majority Leader Flanagan needs every vote to pull these things through. In this particular case, in this negotiation, as it's been reported, of course, I don't know because everything was done in secrecy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The governor was promising to deliver Senate Democratic votes to Flanagan to get the deal through. And the Senate Democrats said, why would we do that if you never told us anything about what's in the package? So I think the governor sort of on a mechanical level either didn't want this deal to ever really go through or just made a mistake in terms of not involving the Senate Democrats. But let me mention one thing about the pay raise just generally. The legislature and the governor came to an agreement on this commission in 2015. I assume the legislature had to give the governor something to create the commission in the first place.
This is the well-known commission that would be basically, we all thought, a shill to raise the legislators' pay so they wouldn't
and
have
the
to do it themselves.
Branch.
Yeah, and the executive
branch. And the executive branch, because the commissioners too. And where they made their first mistake is they made it a sort of, you know, a puppet commission as compared to an independent commission.
Right.
I think the public could have swallowed it if people independent of the political establishment came in and said, this is the proper compensation.
But it's basically the governor.
But they didn't do that. They didn't do that. In fact, it was so clear because at the end, the governor pulled back his people. But again, just to go back, the legislature thought they had a deal. The governor reopens the deal. And I think the legislature feels like that the governor moved the goalposts. Now, as your point is well taken, given the scandals that have occurred in Albany, it's a reasonable thing to expect that the governor and the legislature should do serious ethics reforms, outside income being part of it. Remember, Cocoa's problem and Howe's problems had nothing to do with outside income. It was a pay-to-play scheme that they had.
That's outright trickery, allegedly.
Allegedly. And they were shaking down campaign contributors to get government contracts. I mean, there's a lot of other things that needed to be done besides outside income.
But the House of Representatives and the Senate have a limit on outside income.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
And
it makes perfect
States
sense
government.
To do it. It makes perfect sense to do it. We totally support the idea. But in terms of this, the way this played out, the legislature, I assume, had to trade for the commission in the first place in 2015. They engineered it in this sort of crazy way that I think is indefensible. Nevertheless, at the last minute, the governor pulls back his puppets and they don't have a vote. And that deep sixes the legislature's pay raise and the commissioner's pay raise. And this goes back now almost 20 years that they haven't had an increase in salary.
We should point out that we're talking with the remarkable Blair Horner, head of the New York Public Interest Research Group, and a guy who probably knows more about this than anybody I know. So what about poor Tom DiNapoli? I love Tom DiNapoli. Tell me this. You're so smart. Why is it that the governor can't lay his hands off of Tom DiNapoli? Why is he always attacking the guy?
Well, I mean, part of it is institutional. Every governor and every comptroller always have tension because the comptroller's job is supposed to be the guy with the green eye shades checking the state's books. The governor wants to spend the money. Every governor wants to spend the money with as little oversight as possible. This governor in particular wants to do as much as he can in complete and total secrecy.
Well, wait a second now, but especially when he's surrounded by people who are going to go on trial for their lives now.
And, you know, the funny thing is, the sort of tragic element to all of this is the governor, since he's become governor, has advanced successfully proposals with the legislature to cut back the comptroller's powers to oversee in areas, I mean, we don't know about
it's
the
just
specific
what
contract.
I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it really, the argument for why you need independent oversight of government couldn't be made better than by the fact that they've cut back the comptroller's powers and and potentially as a result, there's been this controversy and scandal.
Well, yes, and I just want to go a little further with that. It seems to me, Blair, that when you have guys like Prococo and Howe, and they are indicted now, that's not alleged, they're indicted for shakedowns and things of that kind. And then one of the things that had happened was that Cuomo and the legislature went along with it, took away Tom DiNapoli's powers to pre-audit. Now, I could argue that if Tom DiNapoli's powers had not been taken away, that some of this might not have ever gotten to happen.
It's possible, or it's also possible that he could have ended up looking the other way. We don't even know, right? I mean, there's a lot of things we don't know about this. But your point about why does the governor go after DiNapoli is probably the same reason why he's always fighting with the attorney general. The governor is a formidable political force. He doesn't want it to be challenged. And one way that you ensure that is by, you know, being sort of a rough political character.
Oh, now that you've brought up the attorney general, this is an interesting thing. AG often stands in this state for almost governor because AGs succeed to the governorship, right?
The last two.
That's right. Not always with success. However, this particular AG is not well known to the people. They don't know who he is all that well. And so now he's taking on none other than the great Goliath, Donald Trump. And he says, okay, you got a foundation. You want to close the foundation maybe, but you can't close it without anteing up to the bar in terms of things, allegations that have been made about your foundation. How does that play into state politics?
Well, Trump was not particularly popular in New York. Hillary Clinton won it in a landslide. I think that we'll see how it all plays out in terms of whether or not the president-elect is successful or not. I mean, his polling numbers are not particularly great nationwide, and they're lousy in New York. So from Schneiderman's perspective, Donald Trump, I mean, these investigations that he launched have occurred, you know, before the election. He also has, by the way, just to sort of add to the mix, he's in a big fight with Exxon, and the head of Exxon has been nominated to be Secretary of State.
When you say he, you mean Schneiderman's in a big fight.
Yes, that's right.
Yes,
and okay. So the Attorney General of the state of New York could actually be the point of the spear in terms of the Democrats sort of taking on the president-elect in a number of levels, on a personal level in terms of the controversies around the Trump Foundation, which Schneiderman argues violates New York State's charities law. And since Trump was based in New York, the charity is regulated by the attorney general. And even on larger sort of nationwide public policy, where the head of Exxon, sort of amazingly, being nominated to be Secretary of State by the president-elect. And that's going to come to a head, too, at the same time as Schneiderman is challenging all the oil companies, including Exxon, for their strategies that essentially bamboozled the public on the issues of climate change and may have artificially inflated the value of their reserves and misled shareholders, which is effectively the argument that Schneiderman's using to sort of go after Exxon. So Schneiderman's actually deeply involved in conflict with the president-elect in a way that is not straight up partisan.
So in the end, we worry a little bit about federalism, meaning that the federal government and the state government, they each supposedly have some sovereignty. But over the last couple of hundred years, when these two have faced off, the feds almost always win. How would you like to be Eric Schneiderman right now with the possibility of a guy who has a reputation, Trump, of taking no prisoners, of getting even, and Schneiderman is showing some guts here.
Yeah, and his neck is stuck out there. I mean, the New York State Attorney General has unique powers in terms of the financial industry. Former Attorney General, former Governor Elliot Spitzer learned that by taking on Wall Street after the economic collapse through the Martin Act. And so this attorney general can take on Exxon through that. And because he regulates the home of where most of the large charities are in New York, he has, again, unique powers that really put him in a very interesting spot. And he has to play it carefully, though, because the more it smacks of partisanism, the more he muddies his own message. If this is a straight-up sort of pre-Barrara-like attack, like Joe Friday from the old show, just show me the facts, ma'am. I think it would be much more compelling, and it could have much more of an impact nationwide.
I want to go back.
Let me just mention one other thing. I mean, I think the states are going to be where the action is in terms of things like environmental policy. There's a big story in the Times over the weekend about how California and Governor Brown are really, because California is one of the largest economies all by its state by itself in the world, they will be able to sort of play almost a global role in negotiating climate agreements. If New York teams up with them and some of these other states, you can end up effectively driving global and therefore national policy, despite what the Trump administration and perhaps its Secretary of State from Exxon want to do. And so it's sort of a fascinating play with on this new federalism that Reagan coined 30 mm-hmm. years ago may actually turn out to be something that could be significant. Of course, that depends on who's on the U.S. Supreme Court.
You're a very smart guy. So I wonder, there's a move on for yet another constitutional convention in New York. I have studied the issue quite carefully, and I have decided we shouldn't have one.
Right.
People that I really respect, like Professor Gerald Benjamin and others, are really for constitutional convention because they think, well, it offers the possibility of making some great changes in the Constitution. But my position has always been, wait a second now. You know, we've tried this kind of thing before. We have a constitutional convention. The same jokers who elect the people in the Senate and the Assembly are going to elect the people in the constitutional convention. We'll spend millions of dollars on it. And therefore, ipso facto, we shouldn't have it.
Well, NYPERG hasn't taken a position on it yet. 20 years ago, we didn't either. We decided to play sort of the role of referee. The argument for is Albany's such a mess, we should roll the dice and see if we can fix it through a constitutional convention.
But not with the people who were making the mess in the first place.
And the argument against, as so eloquently done by Alan Chartok, is that, I mean, who can run to be a delegate, right? Who has the political apparatus, the ability to raise campaign contributions, the infrastructure to circulate petitions, to run to be delegate? Because the way a constitutional convention works is delegates, three delegates per New York State Senate district and 15 statewide, run for office and win. And those are the delegates if you have a convention, 204 people. So who can do that? Who can take time off from their job? Who can raise the money? Who can circulate the petitions? That's the Alan Chartok argument. The proponent's argument is, yeah, but the place is such a mess anyway. Let's roll the dice and maybe we can fix things and modernize a constitution which has, you know, grown out of control due to the lack of overhaul.
Finally, Blair Horner, constitutional convention aside, we do have Preet Bharara, one of my heroes, as far as I'm concerned. He's going to stay on.
I'm with you on that.
He stays on as U.S. attorney. For some reason, Donald J. Trump decides that this is a good idea. He had promised it during the campaign when I think he assumed he wasn't going to win and that this was something that might look good on his vita. But anyway, he's going to stay on as attorney, U.S. attorney for now, because we do know that he serves at the pleasure of the president, and if the president wants to fire him, he can fire him, right?
I know he has a term. I don't know what under what rules you can unload U.S. attorneys, but if the president and the attorney general are hostile enough to the things that Preet Bharara find near and dear to his heart, he could end up leaving that way. But for now, he's there, and he's continuing to do his work.
How does the existence of Preet Bharara, and we only have 2 minutes for this, but how does the continued existence of him, looking at Albany, looking at the mafia, looking at all of the things that go wrong in New York State, how does his existence actually play out in terms of our politics?
Well, you know, it has to be for the governor and the political elite and the legislature, it has to be something that they worry about, that they're constantly looking over their shoulder because they know he's deployed FBI agents. They know that some of their colleagues have worn wires. They know that people who know a lot about where the bodies are buried are now facing time in the pokey. And it can't make them feel good. And so the fact that Bharara is still breathing down their neck hopefully will make them behave better. And, I'm an optimistic guy.
There's a great deal at stake here. We have a new Trump administration. He said he's going to get rid of Obamacare. He says he's going to deal with Medicaid, or the word is some of the poorest people in New York State, some of the oldest people, some of the most handicapped people. That could blow a hole in the New York State budget, couldn't it?
Yeah. The estimate is from, I think, the Napoli's office that if the Affordable Care Act goes south, the state could face a $5 to $6 billion budget hole. Medicaid is part of that. Is one of the biggest expenditures in the state. And so if the state loses money on Medicaid, and New York State, one of its big industries is healthcare industry. I mean, New York City is sort of like ground zero for healthcare delivery, training, and technology in the world. And to the extent that you're cutting back on healthcare spending in New York, you're affecting that industry. It could have a big devastating consequence for the state's financial situation going forward.
Our guest has been the wonderful Blair Horner, the executive director of New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. He's the guy who does the heavy lifting here around Albany. So, Blair, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.